Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Love Hour podcast. I am your host, Miss Kev on stage, and I am joined by my husband and co-host,
the Kev on. Dang.
You went through puberty right now.
I did. The Kev on stage. They said that his voice cracked. He was so embarrassed. He was like, I was talking. It was like, oh, and he was like, oh.
My poor baby. His voice keeps talking. I'm cracking. I told him recently because his voice is getting like really, he's 13, so he's going through puberty. His voice gets really deep. And so the other day I told him, when you talk to me, take all the bass out of your throat. Talk to me only in soprano. We are joined. I'm so excited to be back because we dropped an episode over the holiday break, but we didn't record an episode.
It feels like
we've
been a minute.
So it does feel like we've been gone quite a while, but we didn't miss an episode. Shout out to consistency. Hey, the word of the year. We are joined this week by Morgan Johnson.
And she's going to teach you how to cheat on your spouse and get away with it.
Hello. It's not an opposite. She's gonna teach. Morgan Johnson is a relationship counselor and trust recovery specialist. And I am so excited for this conversation. You guys know I try to touch base with all of my guests at least once before they come on the podcast to kind of get a feel for like, this is why I love you. This is why I want you on the show.
Hey, nice to meet you. This is why I love you.
Yes. And this is kind of what I was thinking the episode topic could be. And I always have like, honestly, I should like record those conversations because I have some of the best conversations with my guests before we're actually on the podcast. And Morgan's was, I just kissed the mic. It's my own, so I guess it's not that bad.
It's not that bad. It's just
still,
your mouth.
Yeah, it's still gross. Anyway.
A stand-up comedy club mic like I did. I almost just melted right on the stage. I lost all my jokes. I started sweating.
I remember.
How many people have kissed and licked and spit on that mic, and I was just like, I'll just die now.
Yeah, that's how you feel.
It was terrible.
That's so gross. Ugh. Anyway, I had
or
a conversation.
Church mic? That's even worse. They've
just
been casting out
stop
demons. Get out of there. You know, sweating all over it. Ugh. And they never clean these on church mics.
Never.
The devil is right in here.
Yes.
You think the devil's, hell,
he's in the mic.
and he's in the feedback on the monitors.
And he said that
sorry,
for
I'm
sure.
I'm taking over.
Anyways, we have Morgan on the podcast. I'm super excited. I'm going to allow you to introduce yourself. Tell us how you got started and where you're from and all of those things.
Yeah, so I'm Morgan Johnson. I'm from Austin, Texas.
Hey, keep Austin weird.
Yeah, always. I did my master's in 2011, so I've been practicing since about 2015 because I took some time off. I actually have a background in the music industry. So,
really?
Yeah, I was a tour manager and I play bass, electric bass and drums, kind of. So,
hold on, big boy.
Yeah, I had this you was other
a,
life.
You
before.
Was slapping a bass.
Yeah.
You slapping a bass, mom?
Yeah.
Wow.
So even after my master's, I took some time off and I moved to Brooklyn and I was a tour manager there for a hot minute. And then I finally decided to move back and met up with a mentor in Austin. And she's like, what are you doing? Like, go back, sit for your boards, get going, get practicing. And so I sat for my boards and then I started working at a relationship counseling center.
Wow.
Because in my training, I'd worked with teens and I felt really burnt out. I was like, I don't need to, these are not the problem. I need to talk to their parents.
Right?
Yeah. I need to talk to these parents.
Get to the
root. And so I started working with couples in the end of 2015 and just fell in love with it and started specializing in trust recovery just because that was the where I was working. That was kind of what was the
main. I just have to know, what kind of music did you play?
I played rock and roll.
That's awesome.
What?
That's awesome.
You need to love your spouse.
Yeah.
Love is the way. Trust and recovery.
That was their
really,
exact
though, that,
song.
The music industry, and I was a bartender before. That's been the best training for doing the work that I do.
I bet you that bartending thing, because people in there trying to drink that pain away.
Oh yeah, no one is gonna. No one's gonna overwhelm me. I'm unflappable. I'm going to stop you if you're being aggressive in front of me. I know how to throw a grown man out the back of a bar, so no one's gonna
break
an elbow.
I love that.
Yeah.
Dang, Morg, how old are you? Can you ask that? I'm sorry. Women, don't ask how. Cut to an ad. That's a lot of stuff to happen, and then be like,
I love that you had a whole life before.
Okay, yeah, let's just
and
move
then
on.
And then relationship counseling.
I think that's fantastic. That's like super intriguing. I obviously didn't know that at all. But that's super cool. I'm super excited to know that about.
Call?
I didn't get that in the call. We didn't go that far. I was just kind of fanning out. And I'll tell you why I started fanning out. So if you guys know, I'm not licensed at all. I just be reading a whole bunch of stuff. And I love Esther Perel. I love Gottman. And Morgan is like studying up Esther Perel, Gottman, and there's another one, isn't
emotionally
there?
Focused
emotionally
therapy.
Focused therapy.
Yeah, so you can just call it EFT.
EFT, okay. So I love reading all of that stuff. I've never studied it, obviously, in depth, but when I started following Morgan, I would see her post, and I'm like, ooh, she follows Esther? Ooh, she does Gottman stuff? Ooh, she does emotional focus EFT stuff? Shout out, I think I like her. And so I just connected and reached out, and I'm like super excited. So how did you get into like specifically the trust recovery aspect, especially coming from like the music business, then doing teens, and then going like focusing specifically on trust recovery?
So the center where I landed to begin my internship, that was their specialty already. It was kind of complex cases. My colleagues say I'm really best with like a dumpster fire, just like the more conflict, the more distress. And that was the way that I was trained. Gottman is a great model for that as well as EFT. So I just luckily happened to just land in a great place where that was what we were primarily working with.
That's cool. Did you have something you wanted to say, Kevin?
I asked her how old she was. I just want to kind of move on.
Okay.
Oh, I didn't even hear you.
No, don't answer. You didn't?
No, I didn't hear you.
God dang it, I brought it up again. Let's just move on, Liz. This or that, this or that.
Okay, so let's do the that or this or that question. I'm super excited for this conversation. I think it's going to be a fantastic. So anyway, we always start with a that or this or that question, which I haven't done in quite a while, I think. Did I do it the last time we were?
No.
Yeah, I didn't think so. Okay, let me see if I can find one. I started to look for one earlier.
Today?
Hold on. I started to look for one and chat, I got all the way sidetracked. Hold on. Okay, here we go. Let's do. Okay. You have the ability to return to your preteen school age self. Ooh. Would you rather use this new ability to befriend and hang out with your son or your parents? Oh, this is a great question.
That is a good one.
You have the ability for only 1 week. With whatever option you choose, you go to the same school and be involved in one extracurricular activity that your son or your parents were involved in. The only rule is that you cannot reveal who you are in relation to. So you can't tell your son that I'm actually your parents. You can't tell your parents that I'm actually your child.
Oh.
This is a great question. It's so creative. Okay, guess first.
Ooh, I feel like I would want to go as a kid and play with my mom, like
play with
on
your
the
mom?
Playground. Yeah, totally, and not let her know. That would be so wild.
Yeah, I think so too.
Yeah,
Kev.
I already read my kids' text messages, so I know what they'd be on. actually, I don't really do that because I don't know what I want to find. Man, that's I think
it's weirder to think about it with kids.
It is. I would really want to see what my kids act like at home.
Yeah,
outside
without
of
you.
The home. Like, man, what y'all be talking about? And are y'all cool? Do people like y'all? Are y'all bullies? Are you getting bullied? Because you know they ain't telling you the truth.
They don't
when they
be
come
telling
home.
The full
They be
truth.
Lying. Mm-hmm. But to see what my mom was like before she had kids, she had to tell me to go to bed. Like, what was she like at 14? Definitely parents. My dad was probably a nerd, though. He had them glasses on. Like, ooh, I play the sax.
That's your answer?
That's my answer. Man, I don't know. Because with my kids, I feel like I want to see, like, how I, as a parent, how I've raised you.
Right.
How you turned in. Like, what are you like at school? But I realize I don't know anything about my parents pre-me.
Right.
You know, I know I have an idea of how my kids are, like, by their friends and their choices and stuff like that. But my parents, they didn't exist to me until I was born in the world.
Yeah, and they're kind of like your parent.
Yeah.
Always. It's never, like, you didn't have a life before you
right.
had.
Actually,
you had
I never even asked. My mom, like, I could ask her, what was she like in school? I've never even asked that. Like, who did she hang out with? So definitely my parents. I would want to see what my parents were talking about.
Okay, so I'm definitely going with my parents as well.
What if my mom was doing coke?
No, she wouldn't. but I think I'm going with my parent actually because I think it would give me a lot of insight and hopefully grace in how I interact with them later on in life.
Oh, yeah.
Because I feel like, child, who raised you? Y'all are out here being kooky.
Is that to your parents?
Yes. Who raised y'all? I got questions. But if I got to see like how they were raised and their home environment and how they acted and stuff, it might help like me deal with them. But not that I have a bad relationship with my parents. I don't. But it might just help me understand is what I should say. Understand them a little bit.
That was
better.
A good one. Whoever wrote that.
That was a really good question. One of the things that I actually think sucks about being a preteen is puberty. Because when you're going through puberty, your face breaks out. You sweat a lot. You feel like you have no control over your body. And it's just the worst thing ever. But Bloom is here to help, child, whether you are an adult or a teen. Why? Because Hug Me Deodorant by Bloom is made with probiotics. Probiotics encourage you to make more good bacteria, and as a result, your body produces less bad bacteria. So BO doesn't exist. And you know, when you have, be a preteen, BO be a whole entire.
I be going
problem.
In the room like, bro, are y'all men?
Listen,
do you work construction? Did y'all hoop in here?
I often have to tell the boys, go back into the shower and scrub under your arms, and then come back out.
What y'all be doing?
And then
in there?
Put an antiperspirant on. And so Bloom is definitely one of those. One of the things that they were just awarded was the best deodorant ever by the New York Post, which is actually a pretty cool honor. I really like them. I always use the coconut and vanilla scent. It smells amazing. But for those men out there, they also have unscented and less fragrant options. Hug Me by Bloom keeps you feeling fresh and super huggable. Right now, our listeners will get 25% off their first stick and free shipping when you go to bloom.com/hour. Again, that's bloom.com/hour for 25% off your first stick and free shipping. If you don't love it and feel amazing when you wear it, return it for a full refund, no questions asked. That's bloom, bloom.com/hour. All right, so let's get into it. You ready?
Yes, ready.
All right, so let's say, for example, someone has an issue in their relationship and they feel that trust is broken. They come to you and they say, Morgan, I'm struggling in my relationship. I don't trust this man. I don't trust this woman.
That's a really nice way of saying it. I don't usually hear it that kind.
Listen, I'm saying nice.
Do they come to you before they cheat on each other or after?
Both.
Really?
Really?
They say, I'm about to cheat on my spouse?
No, I have had people come in as individuals and say, I'm actively in a relationship outside of my relationship, and I want to figure out how to stop it and then do
relationship work.
Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting.
Like, man, I'm going to cheat on her, bro. She tripping.
You're right. Premeditated. I don't know about this.
One thing to start with, I'm not a huge fan of the word cheating.
Ooh, tell us.
Really? Yeah, so I don't use like cheating or infidelity or some of those words are just really like packed with judgment. And so I use the word relational norm violation. Mm-hmm. I know it's more of a mouthful. You can just say RNV, but
relational norm violation.
Tell us what
that
means.
So a relational norm violation just means that you had an understanding, a shared norm in a relationship, and someone went outside of that.
Oh, so that is more encompassing of, because really what matters to y'all relationship, not an overall, this is what relationships are blanket wise.
Yeah, because we can betray each other or lose trust around so many things, especially now. It's not the kind of classic affair partner infidelity I'll see.
Yeah.
Like, you know, student loan debt is a huge relational norm violation. People say like, surprise, I have $70,000 or $80,000 of student loan debt. That was not something that was a shared understanding or agreement, and it's a surprise.
Yeah.
And so it can cause a rip in the trust system.
Okay, so I have
R&Bs.
A question. Emotional norm violation. So
relational.
Relational.
You can say RNV.
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 Let me write it down,
DMV.
Chuck, because I'm going to forget. So one of my questions is RNV. Mm-hmm. One of my questions is, a lot of times, do you think that norms go unspoken?
Yes.
Like we actually don't enter relationships with expectations, like, explicitly stated?
Yes, 100%. I wish that every couple that was going to get married would go in and do some almost preventative counseling, go in before it gets bad. The research shows that most people wait until 6 years when they've been distressed before going in. So,
6 years.
Yes, they wait too long. So most times when you're seeing me,
that's
it's
a 7 year
already
inch.
On fire. Yeah, it's
so
really
you've already
bad.
Built resentment and contempt
yes.
and all that. That's baked into the.
So I love it when people come in and they're like, "We're just started getting together. We haven't gotten married yet, but we want to make a solid foundation." That's the best because then we can make sure and have those conversations. Make sure that we have a shared set of norms and understandings, and then we can kind of edit those and evolve them as we grow by continuing to have those open conversations.
Got it.
There's no antidote for a relational norm violation. I can't give you an inoculation and prevent it. The best way that we can do that, though, is to keep that open communication, to be honest and transparent, and to emotionally attune with each other, or to connect emotionally. Because if we're attuned and connecting emotionally and we're talking about things, that drastically reduces the risk for experiencing a relational norm violation.
So couple can have like an open relationship and still have a relational norm violation if they've gone outside of whatever their...
I love that you asked that, because I work with tons of people in open relationships, and it's just more nuanced. Certain things
we... So they have RNVs even within... talking in theory. I just wanted to sound smart.
You could be in an open relationship and you could have a relational norm violation because maybe we have a process of adding in another partner and you did it secretly or you didn't tell. That counts.
And that has the same effect of like
It'll still hurt the trust just like it would in a monogamous relationship.
That makes sense.
That makes a lot of sense. I think because like Melissa and I, we were talking about... We have different sets of friends. Some saved, some unsaved. And like some couples don't mind their husband or wife going to strip clubs at all. Like that's not an R&V at all.
That's a norm for their relationship.
Like, man, go. Spend a little money. Blow some steam off. But in our relationship, if I went to a strip club without Melissa's knowledge and just came home smelling like somebody else's booty
sweat,
I would
have a problem.
Yeah, I can tell my that would be an R&V.
Like, also, who was twerking, Kev? Who was twerking? But I think that's really... smart. That's why. So we have a lot of... This is an aside, but I think it's an important aside. We have a lot of fans of the Love Hour who are not married. Mm-hmm. And I think this is a perfect example of why you can learn this stuff before you get married.
Absolutely.
And it's a better foundation, because so much of our... We talked a couple episodes ago about your money story. Like, how do you see money based on the way you're raised? Mm-hmm. And you just click that. You can have a blank story for everything
in life.
You know, like cleaning or spending money or you have all those things about sex, you know, affection. Did you we got a lot of Nigerian friends and their parents very rarely show any affection ever. Like they never see each other kiss. So they think that's weird to hug and kiss. But my kids see me kiss Melissa and hug her all the time. So at least learning that about yourself prior to going to a relationship makes you that much better of a potential partner.
Oh, yeah.
And then if you can take that step forward and then talk with your potential, you know, spouse about it, that is more than Melissa and I even had.
That was good. Yeah. So one of the things I think comes up is you don't always even know that this is like an expectation that you have until it's violated.
Yes, 100%.
So how do you even... like, what resources do people have? Maybe it's going to see you, Cha. But like, what are questions and things that you can get this information out of you so that way you can have that discussion?
So I think one great book to start with is Seven Principles for Making Marriage Work by the Gottmans. You may have heard of that
one.
It really kind of outlines like what is a healthy relationship? What are all of the components? And it just gives you like those kind of buckets or those topics. So it's sort of like, we need to have that financial discussion. We need to have that discussion about kids. We need to have discussion about all of those different pieces. That's one place that you can start.
That's a good one.
Also, just coming to someone like me, a relationship counselor, a marriage and family therapist. And
you guys know the questions to ask.
We know the questions to ask. So that's probably the easiest if it's something that you can afford to do, or doing a premarital workshop or group or something like that if you needed something that was a little more financially accessible.
Yeah, absolutely.
So good. So then so they're in with you, and I feel like something that comes up a lot when these R&Vs are broken or happen.
What do
you
say?
When they happen? Okay, because it's already a violation. Okay. When that happens, you don't even know like the first step in recovering the trust. So what are the strategies that you offer to people to say, I want to stick this out. I want this thing to work, but I don't even know where to begin.
Yeah. So where we begin is kind of helping them orient to a map of what our process is, because it's kind of a triphasic recovery process. So Gottman would call it atone, attune, attach.
Okay.
In EFT, we're kind of looking at stage one as de-escalating the conflict and stabilizing. In the second stage, we're restructuring the patterns that got us into this boat in the first place. And then in the third stage, we're integrating. We're using all of our new skills to kind of move forward and prevent that from happening. And so stage one is honestly the hardest. It's unfair. It just really sucks. So the involved partner, so the partner who went outside the relationship or did the R&D, they have to kind of sit tight with the emotional stuff that, because a lot of times that person maybe even had more pain to begin with, and that
the offender,
yes, the person, the involved partner can sometimes have a bulk of the pain and they just didn't communicate it. Not condoning that, obviously.
No, yeah, yeah.
But it's inherently unfair for them because they have to sit tight until we can help stabilize the hurt partner, the person who has just realized that this has happened. Mm-hmm. Because if they're unstable and they're emotionally dysregulated, no amount of explaining from the involved partner can be absorbed. And I really want that. So I have to kind of help the involved partner here. Like, I want your partner to be able to hear you.
Right.
They can't right now because of things like PTSD symptoms can even show up, especially, especially in the West. In America, we see a lot of PTSD symptoms, especially for white women, show up in the aftermath of a relational norm violation. So when they first show up, are kind of stage one for sometimes 8 weeks longer. I've got one couple who maybe it was like a half of a year before we even really kind of got stabilized. It just depends on how intense the relational norm violation was. But once we get stabilized, we're kind of through the crisis, as Esther Perel would say, then we move into figuring out the insight. How did we get here? What actually put us on this path? And the Gottman Institute has a really cool model. I just shared it on my Instagram, but it's a 24-step. It's called the Betrayal Cascade, and it sort of shows you the steps that most relationships go through that lead up to an RNV. And so
Wait, whoa. So what you're saying is, and Gottman's really good because he has the horsemen too that can indicate divorce. So what you're saying is he's looked at whatever in his research, and so
Shirley
many.
And Shirley Glass and Carol Rustbelt are the two that did it with him.
So they look at all of these. Yeah, shout out to y'all. You know, RNVs that happen in relationship, and they have outlined, these are the steps that normally.
Here are 24 steps that we go through that lead to that experience.
Ooh, can you share some of them?
Yeah, so.
What's your Instagram while you're getting your
connect
phone?
With. I just put Morgan. Connect with Morgan Johnson.
Yeah, if you pull it up, I've got it just.
I got it. Mm-hmm. You go by JoJo?
Mojo.
Mojo.
Yeah, because it's Morgan Johnson.
Took me way too long to figure that out.
But the crucial piece in that, there it is. So if you click on that.
It was a swipe.
So it starts out with one person turning away or against the other person. So that means like if your partner is reaching towards you, you ignore them, you don't respond, or you turn against them. You're kind of sassy or mean to them. Then we start making negative comps about that turning away. So like, my friend doesn't do that. Why do you do this to me? We have a negative
comps
meaning
comparison.
Then emotional distance starts
to
happen.
That's fair.
Absolutely. So then emotional distance starts to happen. You get a sense of like my partner isn't there with me. More flooding starts to happen when negative events are experienced or when we're in conflict. It gets louder. It gets bigger. We have a harder time doing repairs, even if we have a repair process.
Well, can I pause you? Yeah. Rumination is the...
unable to stop thinking about
something.
Okay,
Josh gave us that word. So that's the... Okay, she pissed me off, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And then it's like, man, she's always pissing me off.
Yeah.
She's always pissing me off.
And you're just ruminating. And this really drives me mad about what she's
up to.
And then,
your mind's just gathering more and more of those. Okay,
It's sort of like all the negative stuff starts to stick to you. It's like a conflict-absorbing state, is what we'll see in a minute. So then repairs stop working. If you have a repair process, you can try it, and you don't feel closer afterwards.
Yes.
The cycle happens where we start having blow-ups. We avoid the conflict. We suppress it. And then we start avoiding self-disclosing at all. And that's where secrets kind of start happening.
Oh, that's good because it's not... Mm-hmm. Your secret beginning starts prior to the R&V.
Absolutely.
It starts like, you know what
I'm not even about the R&V.
And
it's
not even
about
the R&V.
About your feelings, about, you know, just your experience with the other person.
So now the R&V just goes into that secret box that you've already been.
Yeah, it's already there. Oh,
dang.
I love that. Yeah, there's a little secret box that you've started to create.
Yeah, and the R&V just goes in there.
Yep, exactly.
That's this is how you can start an emotional affair because you start talking to somebody else about that stuff you should probably self-disclose with your spouse, you start sharing that with another person.
Oh, yeah, and we're almost there. So bids for attuned connection decrease. So you stop reaching out for sex. You stop reaching out for intimacy and connection. Next, loneliness increases. You start decreasing your investment in the relationship. The dependency in your relationship decreases, and you start confiding in others more. if you've heard, kind of, you talk in private and in public, you defend the relationship. Stan Tatkin talks about that. Mm-hmm. At this point, people start kind of talking to their friends about, oh, well, she does this or he does this, and it's awful. So then sacrificing starts to decrease, and substituting or finding what's not in the relationship in other places. Like maybe you don't have a nice intellectual bond with your partner, so you'd start chatting with a coworker who's really smart that you love to talk to. Things like that start
work
happening.
Husbands.
Yes.
They be making brownies for you.
Then defensiveness increases, and maximizing your partner's negative traits increase. Mm. So instead of just saying like, oh, she had a bad day, she's just a bitch, I just, you know, it goes to that kind of bigger.
You go all the way in.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Then we start minimizing positivity.
Shoot.
We start verbally trashing, and we stop verbally cherishing our partner.
Let me pause you real quick, Mojo. Yeah. People are watching this like, oh, snap. I can see myself in these. I can see my spouse in these.
And
like,
if you go get a counselor now. If you recognize any of these things showing up in your relationship, go to a counselor now. Yeah. Nip it in the bud.
Because this doesn't, you, in my mind, I would never think of like prequel. That's not the word.
I know, but
like,
the movies don't show it that way. They show you just have this like snap affair, and then it's just, no, it starts way back in the emotional attunement. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Dang. Okay, I'm sorry.
We're almost done. Don't apologize. We're almost done. So then the story of us goes negative. So if I asked you guys, like, how did you meet? Both of you are going to light up and tell me about it. If I ask a relationship in this boat, how did you meet? Like, I guess we met this way or whatever. It just goes negative. That story turns.
She went to my high school, all right?
Yeah, exactly.
A lot of people went there.
Exactly. And then resentment builds, and we start seeing our partner as selfish. Mm-hmm. Loneliness increases, and vulnerability to other relationships starts to increase. Sexual desire reduces. And then we become less pro-relationship.
Mm.
And then we start having those innocent new secret liaisons. And now we're almost to the last few steps. We put a wall up between ourselves and our partner.
Once you put that wall up, you're going to get somebody else's walls.
Yes.
Walls, you want somebody else. Like, oh, I got the emotional wall. I'm getting the physical wall over here.
Well, Shirley Glass even uses a metaphor of walls and windows. Mm-hmm. And it's sort of like where people on the outside of the relationship should just have a window that switches so that they've got
from the
wall.
Window to the wall. From the window. Sweat drop down the balls. Ski. The yin yang tans we're talking about R&B.
We're talking about R&Bs.
From the window to the wall to the sweat in the balls. Oh, skeet, skeet.
They just knew.
We don't give them enough respect.
They knew Shirley Glass's research. We just had no idea.
The yin yang twins should be counseling.
Research and was like, you know what?
It was a subliminal message in rap music. Y'all got to listen with your third eye. That's the eye in your penis.
So that's for another topic.
Oh, snap.
So secrets and deception increases. We start actively turning to others to have our needs met and find what's not in the relationship. And then by the 24th step, deception and boundaries have been crossed and relational norms have been violated fully.
Let me ask you this.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, everybody doesn't have to do all 23.
Correct.
How many do you think of, like, I could see one or two of these if you go
you
too
mean
far.
If you did like one or two of those behaviors?
Yeah. This is probably a silly question, but is there like if you're doing four or five of these, you might be more susceptible? Is it the more you do, the more likely you are?
No,
does it work
like
that?
It's more of a flow chart. So it's less like factors associated
with it,
of the like process or the
flow. Okay, understood.
But if you're looking at that first list of 10 and you're doing a few of those, mm-hmm. that's why I'd say go ahead and get into a relationship counselor and make sure that you don't set yourselves up to go the way.
Because the last 14 are prophesying your future.
Right.
Because that's the way that... And you start to understand how, number one, how that 6 years happens. Because you're not going to go through all 24 of them. I mean, maybe you do go through all of them in a year. But typically, you maybe experience one and you're like, no, let me go back to my spouse. Let me try to work this out. Then you work it out, it doesn't work. So now you're at step two. Then maybe you try again. It just starts to build over time. And then you just find, which I thought this was so good. Why, when you said the involved partner ends up with a lot of hurt, but they can't speak because they've gone through all of that. And maybe they were the ones reaching out.
Mm-hmm.
and were feelings of rejection or whatever, mm-hmm. they weren't met, those needs weren't met, and now they've turned.
Yeah, involved partners don't do this because they're just bad people. This is because we've lost attunement, we've lost connection. I think a lot of times it's easy to get blamey, but
oh yeah,
really, it's just a human thing that happens.
Yeah,
there's even a commandment about it, or two,
right,
even.
Right. Oh, so good. That was a lot of information, but that was like,
I know,
really.
Tell me if I'm info dumping.
No,
on
no,
dump,
girl.
No, no, no.
I
think that was really, yeah. That's okay. Right now, that's what we call it. If I know we, there was 24 steps, and we just went through all of them. Make sure that you guys go to Morgan's
image.
Instagram, and it's like the Instagram post before the one she posted of the Love Hour, and it has all of those 24 steps out. Speaking of steps, you want to make sure that you get your steps in, get your life together, exercise, do all the things, and while you're doing it, child, look cute. I've been wearing my Fabletic pants.
She been wearing,
I ain't gonna lie,
religiously.
I've been rocking these. Listen, Fabletic, send me some more, okay? I've been rocking these like nonstop in real life. The thing that I love about them is that they are comfortable and they are cute. I ask for nothing else in life. Comfort and cute. If you do these things, listen, what more can I ask? They allow you so much. They have so many things available. They have cute tops, pants, outfits. They have jackets, sports bras, everything that you need to go out there and have a really good workout session and feel great while you are doing it. It's already hard enough to get out the bed and go to the gym. The least I could do is get out the bed and feel cute on my way to going to the gym. Okay. New styles, collections, and prints are released every month, and there's a Fabletics 45-day workout guarantee. Sweat it out for 45 days, and if it doesn't perform, return it for a full refund. Fabletics is offering my listeners an incredible deal you don't want to miss. Get two leggings for only $24. That's a $99 value when you sign up for VIP. Just go to Fabletics.com/love to take advantage of this deal now. That's Fabletics.com/love to get two leggings for only $24. Also, free shipping on orders over $49. Y'all know it's the holiday season. Y'all can take advantage of that real quick, fast, and in a hurry, and save yourself a few coins. International shipping is available, and there's absolutely no commitment when you purchase your first order. Again, go to Fabletics.com/love. The other thing I want to tell you, I love when we have female-founded companies. As you know, Fabletics is a female-founded company. It's founded by Kate Hudson. I also want to tell you about Lola. They are also a female-founded company. You guys know how much and how important. What?
I didn't know that was Kate Hudson's company.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yes.
That's Goldie Hawn, baby.
Yes, it is. Lola, though, is a female-founded company that makes products specializing and targeted with women in mind. This is so important. If you haven't listened to the Four Women Only series, you need to listen to it, because what we learned is that when condoms and lube and all of those things aren't made with women in mind, we are at pH balance begin off, mm-hmm. and that be causing all type of infections that we don't want, we don't need in our lives. We got things to do, and having an infection ain't one of them. And so when you have a product that's made with us in mind, it helps to aid and prevent those things from happening. So what you want to do, you guys know we use the lube.
We use that lube.
You can go to MyLola, or yeah, for 30% off your first month subscription, visit MyLola.com and enter Love Hour 30 when you subscribe. Again, 30% off your first month subscription. You're going to visit MyLola.com and enter Love Hour 30 when you subscribe. While I know we said that was a lot of information, but honestly, I think it was so good because I literally, as you were talking, you see dominoes falling.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Like that's what you see, that this is how you end up from here, how you end up there. And sometimes it's hard to see. I think when you're in a relationship that has R&V, you miss those falling dominoes along the way. You just remember what was. And then you are confused, dazed and confused as to try to figure out how you got here. Mm-hmm. And so seeing that laid out, you start to, oh, I remember when that happened. Oh, I see when that happened. Oh, I remember. And then it all of a sudden it creates this bigger picture. Really, really good information. So once you're in this and we've seen, you know, we're here with you, we've had this R&V, we recognize it, we want to rebuild it. Who's responsible maybe that's not a great word, but I'm going to use it anyway, for like rebuilding that trust. I would imagine the person that's, whose trust was broken, that takes a long time to like lean in and say, I want to trust you again. So how do you go through that without making the other person, the person who cheat or the person who did the RNV, feel like they're hostage to this mistake?
They kind of can feel a little bit hostage to the mistake at the beginning, mm-hmm. especially in stage one. Mm-hmm. And so we're giving a lot of validation and support, or the therapist is, mm-hmm. and really letting them know that, like, I see the goodness in them and I see all of the good features in the relationship. I see the strengths. And so helping them to know, like, we have to get through this kind of painful period while your partner doesn't trust you. Because unfortunately, the best way to know if you can trust someone is to trust them.
That's
and
hard.
So it's really hard for both people. Can you specify a little bit more about what you were asking?
So I think you answered it though.
Okay.
Definitely. One of the things that you just said that I thought was really key, and we were saying before we started actually, was you gave the example of the canoes.
Oh, the canoe.
Yeah. So can you explain that?
Yeah. So a metaphor that I like that a previous mentor gave me was when a couple comes in and there's been a relational norm violation, or they're just in distress, it's sort of like they're sitting in a canoe facing each other, but leaned all the way out. And so they know that if just one person leans in, they're going to tip into the water. So what has to happen is both people have to steadily and concurrently lean in to meet each other.
Yeah.
And that's how we grow trust. And so the path to do that, or what the science shows, like, how do we actually build trust? Mm-hmm. There's a really handy acronym from Gottman and Yoshimoto called ATTUNE, which is ATTUNE. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so the steps that we kind of, this is like just the 30,000 feet view, we increase the awareness. So your awareness of your own emotions, your own body, and your awareness of your partner's emotions and mm-hmm. what's up with them. T stands for turning toward. Have y'all heard that language from
no,
the Gottmans?
No.
Oh, this is great then.
Yeah.
So bids and turns is a language they use, which is basically
bid
and turn. So a bid, I might be like, hey, look at that car outside. Y'all can respond to me in a few different ways. You can turn away from me, just not respond to me, which
never heard of a
human,
car.
Humans, yeah, just not even, just no, not even any words.
Oh,
just
literally, look at that car outside.
Me. Just ignore me. Yes, and human nervous systems hate that the most. A negative response feels better to our nervous system than no response at all. Because as infants, we knew.
Really?
Yes, as infant babies, this is from attachment theory, we knew that we had to be responded to or we're kind of dead in the water. So you can also turn toward my bid. You can say, oh yeah, cool car out there. And you can turn against my bid. So you could be like, that's the worst looking car.
Is that the car
seen.
You used to when you stepped out
yeah,
on me?
Exactly.
Oh, is that the one you went when you were 0-60 on my heart?
Yes, that is a beautiful turn against. And so that betrayal cascade is basically slowly turning away and turning against.
Got it.
So
yeah.
When we want to rebuild trust, we have to start turning toward each other again. When our partner, you know, says like, oh, and we're like, hey, what's going on? Instead of, Gottman calls it sliding door moments. After the movie, he tells a story where he saw his wife in the bathroom and she had tears on her face, and he had a crime novel, and he loves crime novels mm-hmm. more than anything. And so in that moment, he knew I could turn toward her,
right?
Which this bid was her kind of just sitting there crying, mm-hmm. or I could go and read my novel. But in that moment, turning toward her, he was able to figure out what was going on and build a moment that created trust in the relationship.
Oh, that's good. Mm-hmm. So the moment where someone is bidding mm-hmm. and it's met with rejection, I'm mm-hmm. assuming that's
where
how
it's
it
met
fits.
With a turn against.
A turn against.
Or a turn away, just not responding.
Okay, but is that internalized as rejection?
Yes, yes, it can absolutely be. Mm-hmm. And especially if your attachment, the way that you grew up in the world, you had a parent leave, or you're sensitive already to feeling rejection, then those can really hit your system and trigger.
Got it.
Yeah, absolutely.
What letter were we on?
The other T.
The other team. Okay. So thank you. Yeah. So that was awareness. Turning towards people awareness. T is tolerance for other perspectives. So we have to be able to hold your perception and my perception, just knowing that we're never going to see things exactly the same because we're different humans.
Sure, sure.
U is for understanding. So being able to understand our partners. That's a pretty obvious one. N is for non-defensive responding.
Ooh,
that's one that we do a lot of work with if you are coming into my office. Practicing that, learning how to just be active listeners. Oh yeah, it's really, really tough to just sit and listen when we're talking about stuff that's so painful and vulnerable, especially because involved partners, no one wants to hurt their partner that way.
Right.
This is not fun for anyone. Right. And then E is for empathy. So being able to actually imagine the other person's internal world, feel it as though you were really that person.
I'm curious, can I use the term offended party?
The involved partner?
So the involved partner is the person who did the R&V.
Yes.
What's the other person called? The hurt partner.
Yeah.
Do you find that when you're doing this, does the hurt partner feel like you're taking their side?
I was going to ask something similar.
Because I feel like if Melissa did an R&V on me, would say Idris Elba, because it better be someone of that caliber. If you R&V me with the guy who fixes machines, I'm going to be like, come on, man, give me Idris, okay? So if she did an R&V on me and we came into your office and you're like, you know, you got to understand that she was feeling this way. I'm going to be like, man, how are you going to take her side? She was over there in London with Idris.
Yeah.
I can imagine this person is like, no, they're bad, right? Mm-hmm. Right, Morgan?
And so, come on my side. You're totally
tell
right.
them that they're bad so I don't feel crazy that they did this on me. You know what I mean?
Can also feel more like vindicated in your anger if I feel like you agree with me.
Yes.
And so it's a really delicate balance where and I guess I should start by saying that I see the relationship as my client. So it's like, yes, there are people in the room.
I get
and
that.
I do. I have a relationship with each person in the relationship, but the relationship is really my client.
That's good. So you can't really take sides.
Exactly.
Your job is to help fix the relationship.
The whole.
Yes. And so if they're asking me that, I'll even use, we call it immediacy when we're just giving feedback. I'll say like, hey, it feels like you're really wanting me to take sides here and that's not going to help this relationship to feel better. I get why,
That's good language.
Yeah. It was.
Because I would be like, dang. If you said that to me, I'd be like, dang.
Well, her partner is going to be sitting there trying to just fish it out with me and get them on sides. But as soon as, if I take a side or they feel like I'm taking sides.
And you're going to hurt the relationship.
Yeah, it's going to hurt the relationship. And
no client, no get paid.
That also is true.
Hey, come on, y'all got to come back. You understand me?
How do you stay neutral? I feel like I would be like, you know what? He was wrong. Yes, girl, he was.
Well, part of it's doing your own work. So I've done a ton of my own therapy. I have my own therapist and making sure that anything in my past that was of that flavor has been really resolved and processed.
So you don't pull that into your
sessions. That my stuff doesn't show up in the room.
Ooh, if you got an R&V on you, you're going to be tough to work with that day.
Well,
you're like, man, nah, my husband was tripping too, girl. Yeah, they both trash. I mean, I know you probably don't talk like that.
No, I wouldn't tell them that.
Yeah, girl, anyway, woo, Chile.
Chile.
But I never thought about that. You got to keep yourself
I have to be
fresh
neutral and fresh.
And neutral, otherwise you are now damaging somebody else's relationship because of your own baggage.
Bias. Yeah, when people ask, like, why does therapy cost so much? It's not, you're not just paying for that hour or 2 hours with me.
You're paying so I don't go crazy.
To go and do my therapy, to go do yoga, to do all this other things that I do to keep myself grounded and regulated.
That is a good way to keep your prices the same.
Yeah.
You know, I got to have my yoga. Because I got to deal with you and then a whole bunch of people like you. I got to woosa.
But I'm also solution focused, so I don't keep clients in therapy forever.
We figure
out what your goals are, we resolve them, and then I hope that you feel like you don't need me anymore.
Of course.
Because you're already attuned, you're built by neurobiology to like do this thing. My job is to just see what that block or barrier is that's preventing that attunement from unfurling.
Get that
out of the way, and then I trust because of the attachment science that it will just naturally unfurl.
I like that. Okay, I'm with you.
Oh, okay. So one more question, I think, and I might have some more at the end. Okay.
Yeah.
When you are starting out with trust, people don't want to wind up with R&V, but sometimes we might be like overly trusting in the beginning.
Sure.
Do you have like recommendations for people Well, actually, I have two questions, but recommendations for people on like how to evolve trust. I don't know if evolve is the right word, but like how, yeah, like how, what the steps to get to like, I fully trust you.
Yeah. Well, I think one thing that I just thought of as you were asking that was in the beginning of a relationship, there's a phase called limerence. Okay. And our brain is basically on drugs. We have a lot of like serotonin is turned down so that we can obsess and perseverate a little bit.
You are using a lot of big words.
So that we can just, to just think about, ruminate, to just think about that one thing.
You're probably a beast at Scrabble.
I'm so good at Scrabble. You don't even want
to. I just see two words called perseverate, like per what?
And then we have bonding hormones that are turned on, oxytocin, so that we just want to be with that person. Dopamine's also getting pumping. So
your brain is on
drugs. Your brain is on drugs. And so that is the time when we do want to have our best friends, have our family, kind of, we're bringing our new partner around them so we can get some reasonable feedback from people that we already trust. So that
because
we can,
they're not having those same chemical reactions.
Exactly. They
so
can
they're going to be
a little
distant.
Or even a couple's counselor like myself, someone who can just kind of help see the relationship.
Oh, I got a question for you.
Yeah.
Because I've said this before, but I don't know if it's true. Does good sex, like early in a relationship, will that increase all those things in your mind? Like the, like if you feel close and you guys have sex and it's great sex.
Oh yeah, the bonding hormones, yeah.
It's will it be more if you guys are actually having sex?
Yeah, absolutely.
I could see that now because your brain releases oxytocin when you're having like pleasurable experiences. Yes. And then when you, you know, bust that nut, you'd be like, man, I love this woman. I want to marry her this moment.
Yes. And so that's where
we use lube.
We use lube. Everyone use lube.
Lube.
Everyone should use lube. That everyone.
Come on, man. Yes. Have a smooth glide in. Nobody wants painful interactions. You want to have smooth. Like you up in there. You didn't notice. I was on my Lola. I was up in this low to make it smooth for you. Anyway, I like that idea of keeping people around you to basically keep you honest because they're separate from you in the relationship. So how long does that last? Is it a time thing?
It's usually 6 or 8 months, kind of depending.
Is it really?
Yes. Yes. So it's a long time.
Months?
That's why there is a kind of like a lot of people break up at that period of time because they kind of come off of those chemicals.
Your body's off drugs.
Yeah. And you're like, oh, wait, this isn't that great anymore.
Wow.
So we have to have something else in place to keep the relationship going. And that's where that bonding and attunement and the intentionality of keeping a relationship.
That's why them old people was like, old folks was like, you got to give them 4 seasons before you get married. And people getting married 3. You had spring, summer, fall. Those are good seasons. You ain't been through no winters yet.
Yeah.
Dang. I didn't think it was 6. I thought you were going to say 6 to 8 weeks.
That's what I thought you were going to say.
No, months. That's a long time. And for more data just on the science of that, Stan Tatkin is a great book. He has
Melissa
a book
about to nerd out on everything you said.
Yeah, it's called,
I'm already reading. Like, no, I'm reading the 7 books. Principles of Marriage. Like,
yeah.
I'm downloading it today.
That wow. Stan Tatkin has a book called Wired for Love, and he has an audiobook called Your Brain on Love. And Your Brain on Love explains just the neurobiology of all of that and the psychobiology. Yeah.
That's... I can see that. I didn't know it was like scientific. Mm-hmm. We just call that butterflies.
Yeah.
But it's literally like oxytocin,
literally
dopamine,
science.
And like neurons firing in your genetic makeup. Like it's not just a feeling like, you know, movies like, oh, I had butterflies.
Oh, yeah.
Your brain's literally on drugs. Mm-hmm. You're high on love.
A lot of those metaphorical things are really based in science. Like a heartfelt sense of things or a gut feeling. Mm-hmm. We actually have brain tissue. We have, it's called viscera, that's wired around our heart
that's
and
why
around
we say
our
a
guts.
Visceral response.
Yes, you have a visceral response. If you have a feeling in your gut, that's actually like the dorsal part of your vagus wired onto that viscera, and it's kind of associated with a like a brake pedal or like your parasympathetic nervous system. Your heart has the ventral part of that wired. So if you're feeling a heartfelt, that's the sympathetic part of your nervous system, that fight flight or the gas pedal.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a really real thing. It's not just, you know, butterflies.
That is
like
crazy.
Right?
Your body is literally trying to tell you, hey, chill, fam. Hit that viscera. We on that viscera now. We trying to tell you to chill.
But that's also sometimes when you just said that, because again, listening to Esther Perel, she always says it's visceral. You and I'm like, so I like looked it up and I was like, I get what she's saying, but it's
literal felt sense. Yeah, it's not just a metaphor.
Oh, I like that. That was really good.
Our bodies are so cool.
They are, man. That human being, man. God was out here, bro. He was like, man, I'm finna
okay, so
this.
Wait. We didn't go through all of the phases. So after you off drugs, child, then what happens?
Mm-hmm. Then that's where the rubber meets the road and we really start bonding. And if you've heard of, Gottman has a model called the Sound Relationship House.
Okay.
It's sort of like building a house. So that's kind of where we start building the foundation. And then we kind of start moving up into our first conflicts. Around that time is when you'll kind of have your first conflicts and you'll start to figure out what the conflict cycle is in the relationship.
Conflict cycle? Yeah, in
EFT,
what's that?
We would call, like, every relationship has a primary conflict cycle. So it's the more you do this, the more she feels this way, which makes her do this, which makes you feel this way, which makes you do this. And you're off and running into that cycle. And so there's a few kind of main patterns.
People
either move towards each other and kind of like attack, defend. Mm-hmm. They'll move away from each other and just like withdraw and be quiet and not talk. Or they'll do a kind of combo where they'll like demand and criticize and then leave and then come back.
And you tripping and you trash. I gotta go to work.
Yeah, I'm leaving. Then they come back. And so there's...
And another thing.
Yeah, those are the three kind of main conflict cycles. But if
you do a whole nother episode on conflict cycle.
Well, I think it's so beneficial, especially like at the beginning of the relationship, to figure out what our cycle is and agree that when it's happening, we stop it.
Yeah.
We slow down and we move into our repair process instead, because if we just let it happen, it's going to erode trust and it's going to decrease our attunement.
What are examples of the repair cycle?
Process. Yeah, so a good example, if you just search Gottman aftermath it's called aftermath of a regrettable incident, which I think is a really cute way of saying that. A regrettable incident. But it's a 5-step process. You can print it out. It's really handy. So it just walks you through so that you're sharing what your feelings are. You're going through about like what our perceptions of the experience are, what sort of set us up to be crunchy already going into it, then what we really need and what one thing we can work on and what one thing our partner can work on. Because that's, I say, the part of the repair process most people forget is that part. Like, what are we going to do differently so that we feel better next time?
You know what? So we always say marriage is work, and talking to you, like, think about all the stuff you said, like
it
how many tools you need to live in harmony with another human being. Like,
there's nothing more difficult than another human being.
Yes. Because it's not a roommate. Like, a roommate is like, bro, don't talk to me. I don't talk to you. You pay your half. I pay my half. I clean up on Wednesdays.
The
you
stakes
on Thursday.
Are different. Yeah.
Totally stakes different stakes. Different.
There's
but
no emotional
the marriage
bond.
Is like, yes, there's no emotional. And that emotional bond both is what makes it great and what makes it more difficult to work through. Mm-hmm. And all this stuff, I feel like me and Melissa have a lot, maybe not all. But I don't think we had words for conflict. We definitely have a conflict cycle. When you said, I was like, man, this is how she trips.
And most people don't. This is like pretty last 10 or 20 years we've gotten this
wording
language.
For this?
Yeah, it's from
Sue
Johnson.
Dang.
Yeah, so if I could teach couples one thing and one thing only, it would be to help them see what their conflict cycle is and then teach
And that would be
process.
Different with a different person, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Because your relationships are all about dynamics.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Melissa has been saying that, but I wanted to say right there.
Esther Perel. Yeah,
man, that is so valuable to, if you could see that. Like, there's so much in this conversation I'm seeing. There's so much preventative work and also insight. Mm-hmm. You could see, like, if I notice Melissa's doing three of these things, like, some of them you might not be able to notice because they're internal for the other person. But if you notice that, you'd be like, hey, what's
Let's
up?
Talk. What's
I'm
going
feeling
on?
This.
Yeah.
And maybe that could prevent it from going on to the next, you know, step in the proverbial flowchart.
Yeah, so many times just not talking is at the heart of so many of these R&Bs.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So I would imagine that people in a fragile state in their relationship would have a hard time talking because it might be met with defensiveness, or you feel embarrassed, or maybe you just feel ashamed for like feeling the way that you feel. So how do you model this conversation? Does that make sense?
Okay. Yeah, no, that makes sense. So for part one, sometimes there is like a just within the person a emotion dismissing kind of quality. And so with a lot of couples I work with, they'll be concurrently working with individual counselors as well. So we're increasing that emotional intelligence and all of the kind of fluidity just with the language. But I'm really relational as a therapist. So I'm going to be kind of embodying almost like a mom or a parent.
Sure, yeah.
Like the clients are almost experiencing me bonding with them. And so the way that I interact, the other partner can kind of see it. And I'll even have like, especially a lot of husbands will be like, okay, I'm going to do my therapy. I'm going to do the mojo therapist language now.
Right.
Try it. So they can kind of like hear what's effective because they see me de-escalate their partner. And they're like, how did you do that? I want to be able to do, how'd you calm her like that?
That'd be a valuable a valuable tool in everyday life outside of the R&B. Absolutely. Just like, man, she's tripping right now. Mm-hmm. I got to de-escalate her. Because you can't say calm down, relax.
Has anyone ever calmed down in the history of anyone saying calm down?
That's like literally, you would think that word helps. It's the worst thing you can say. I thought about it, but I'd be like, man, that's not going to work.
So can you give us one takeaway here that people can do if they're like, I want to have this conversation, but I don't know how. And maybe you can't because it's so unique.
You just did it beautifully. Oh, what'd I say? I want to have this conversation, but I don't know how. Slice it thinner. So if you say like,
slice it thinner.
Yeah. So if the if one person has a feeling, I'll say like, can you share that feeling with your partner? And they're like, nope, I'll slice it thinner. Tell me what it's like imagining sharing that with your partner.
And
so
just say it.
Yeah. So they'll say it to me because it's just, you know, we don't have that same bond. And so partner can hear it, but it just feels different.
That mediation key is like so different. Having a person, Melissa and I have had so many times. Melissa and I, and Greg and his wife, Mel, Melissa's sister, will have couples conversations. And so many times I'd be like talking to Greg, but talking to Melissa. And she'd be talking to Mel, but talking to me. Mm-hmm. And then Greg be talking to me, but talking to Mel.
Yeah.
And it'd be like, sometimes it's just easier not to say it directly to the person. Mm-hmm. And I feel like this is why I tell people about therapy when they ask you know, certain advice. It's like, first of all, a therapist asks certain questions that uncover the root of your thing so much quicker and easier than a regular person.
So
they're literally trained. You are literally trained. Like when we took my son, she was to the meat and we was all crying like, damn girl, waste your time. Like, we only got 40 minutes in here. Boom, 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 boom. I'm crying. You know what I mean? And I think that's because a lot of times you don't even know your own feelings and you don't know the question to get you to express that until you do. Mm-hmm. And the other part is just having a neutral person can allow you to say things you can't say. Because the thing is, if I tell my wife something that upsets her, she's going to be upset. If I tell you, she can hear it with a little bit. That one piece of separation that little distance takes the edge off and she might be able to hear it a little
more. And
then
I can take what you said and I can reframe it. So you can say, I'm so pissed. And I'm like, I'm hearing that you're really scared. You're terrified and this feels really vulnerable. Then the partner's like, oh, that's how they feel underneath. Okay.
The emotional listen, feeling. Mojo. Listen, Morgan. I've been waiting for an opportunity to say this because I wanted to say it a couple minutes ago. That one of the things that I've been really big on here recently is an emotional wheel. I'll post it because people have been asking me. Don't forget, Melissa. I'm going to post it for y'all on the Instagram.
Oh, the rainbow wheel?
It's a rainbow wheel.
I know exactly
wheel.
Which one you're talking about.
So
I think it's great. Yeah.
I love it. Part of the reason I even started looking at it, you use emotional intelligence. And that's beautiful phrasing. I love it. Is that we often only have or can identify two feelings, happiness and anger.
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
That's fair.
That's it. Yes. I'm either happy. I'm not happy. I'm mad then. That's it. And so what I literally.
Yeah. But and the wheel has like all of those options.
Yes.
And them so root issues are the root feelings. Mm-hmm. Like when you said pissed, I heard vulnerable, scared, angry, and all that. Mm-hmm. But men, we have even less words than y'all.
Yes.
And a lot of times, a lot of times I'll say like, does that feel scary? And they're like, no.
No, I ain't never scared because it could be whatever. Because I'll fire on fear.
Yes. Right. And so that's why I have to kind of explain that. Like anger is a secondary, it's a reactive emotion. So it's always on the surface. The only time it's primary is say like a mom is lifting a car off a baby or something like that. Then it could be primary. But every other time we scoot it over and there's sadness, loneliness, fear.
And we don't have, not only do we not have like the language to say that, but even if you were like loneliness and I'm like, no, I'm mad. It's because I really don't even know how loneliness feels because I've identified it as anger. Yeah. I don't know how rejection feels because I've identified it as anger. Like you don't have, you don't even know how it feels. So I've studied this wheel, so to speak, and allowed myself to sit in, what am I really feeling? What is really going on? Oh, I'm lonely. That's what's going on. Oh, I feel rejected. That's what's going on. Then when you have a conversation with your spouse, it's not simply, I'm mad at you. Mm-hmm. And this situation is making me mad. And what's happening is I feel a sense of rejection. Why? Because you left and I wanted to spend time with you and I felt like you chose your friends over me.
Yes.
We don't say that.
That's so just I love that modeling of describing ourselves instead of our partner. That's one of the fastest ways to turn conflict down. Don't describe what your partner's doing. Don't describe what their motivations are. Talk about what your feelings are, what your needs are.
And the narrative I'm telling myself.
Yeah.
I mean, Melissa and I haven't been using it. I don't know where she got it. What's from Brene Brown?
Brene Brown.
It's the narrative I'm telling myself.
Oh, yes.
And because a lot of times it's not what your spouse is doing or meaning to communicate, but that doesn't matter.
Yeah. That's it's your interpretation of.
It's my interpretation. And then they can say, oh, no, I was doing this, you know, and that's so much more helpful when they can say this is what's, and now it's not on you.
Yeah.
Because I'm telling myself this narrative based on this.
This is the narrative I'm telling myself.
And then I can clear it. Girl, no, it ain't even that. This is the narrative, you know?
Yeah. You can even say, like, I heard you say, instead of saying you said, just I heard you say is the easiest tweak to take some of that out.
Because that means this is how I'm interpreting what you're saying.
Exactly.
Not necessarily this is exactly what you said.
That we all just have different perceptions and we have to honor the kind of both and in that.
Yes.
And I think when you do that, what I heard you say versus what you said is when I say what you said, I'm ascribing a motive.
Yes. And we don't describe your partner's motivations. Yeah. That's a fast way to get into the conflict cycle.
Now, right. The one time you do want to say you said is when she says you said we could have sex. Because you said that and I heard you say that. And I heard you when you said that. So let's do that.
I have a video of you saying that on my phone.
So what actually happened is you said this.
Maybe, oh, I ain't say that. No, I heard you say walls.
Speaking of hearing, I want to tell you about Audible. You guys, I have a book club with over 4,000 members. We just hit over 4,000 members. Shout out to the Boo Hive. Shout out to the Boo Hive headquarters. They got me a desk because they were afraid that I was going to drop my laptop, but I forgot to put it together. So I'm going to have it next week.
Is that what that thing in the living room was?
Yes, and I just didn't put it together.
I was going to help you with that, but I didn't.
Yeah, and we went out of town and tried a whole bunch of stuff. And so I will have that. Thank y'all for that. It's so much more than a book club, to be honest. We talk about some of everything. We talked about T.I. We talked about Kev's videos. We talk about the Love Hour. We talk about some of everything. But one of the most important parts of a book club, obviously, is the books that we pick. So every month, what I do is choose an audiobook for us to listen to. This month, we are listening to An American Marriage by, I think her name is Tariri Jones. I should look it up. It is called An American Marriage. It is a great audiobook to listen to because it has the makings of a good, juicy drama. It has a couple that was once happily married. Then an event happens and changes their whole world.
Incredible.
There is a relational norm violation that happens later on in the audiobook, and the outpouring of that is kind of the plot of the book, of the audiobook, so to speak. It has been really good, really juicy, has generated really good conversations in my book club. So you definitely should join. And even if you don't join, you definitely should get your subscription to Audible because they have amazing ways for all of us to stay connected and fulfill our New Year's resolution to listen to more audiobooks through the year. You know, we always start at the beginning of the year. We're going to audio listen to so many books in the year. We never do it. But Audible makes it really easy for women and people that are on the go, busy. We got lives to do. We cannot just sit down and read a book. I can't because I don't have time for that. So the opportunity to listen while I'm cooking, while I'm cleaning, I'm getting dressed for the podcast. All of those things makes it really, really easy for me. Right now, for a limited time, you can get 3 months of Audible for just $6.95 a month. That's more than half off the regular price. Choose one audiobook and two Audible originals absolutely free. Visit audible.com/lovehour or text lovehour to 500-500. Again, that's audible.com/lovehour or text lovehour to 500-500. That's audible, audible.com/lovehour or text lovehour to 500-500. When you go to audible.com/lovehour, make sure you choose An American Marriage and then join the book club. Okay, so we got some questions for my book club. Shout out to the book club we started. So let's answer those. Does everyone deserve a second chance after a norm violation?
That's a good question. I'm inclined to say that it just depends. Mm-hmm. I think it's really hard to, that's a really hard question to answer. Mm-hmm. it also depends if we're on a second chance or a third chance mm-hmm. or a fourth chance or a fifth chance. I'm kind of inclined to give a second or third chance if we really were bonded and had a really good relationship. We want to keep the relationship together. Mm-hmm. There are times where someone will show you with their behavior that they are not going to change. And mm-hmm. I don't think you want to give chances if someone is not embodying apology. A real apology is a behavior change. So if yep. someone is just saying words to you again and again and they're not changing their behavior, then that's where you want to kind of step back into that, what we'd call discernment, or deciding, like, that's is this the relationship for me or not?
Embodying an apology was really good language. Mm.
That's the secret sauce in the work. Sometimes I'll have an involved partner say sorry 100 times, and it's not until they can really feel it and mm-hmm. cry and show their partner the remorse and the regret and the sincere visceral felt mm-hmm. sense of that emotion that we can move forward.
Ooh, that was...
Be good indeed.
That was good. Next question. How do you know when to throw in the towel?
That's also super, super
personal. Yeah, it's kind of the same.
It's really personal for everyone. I think I told you there's only been a few relationships I've worked with where we've decided like this wasn't the right relationship for them. I think I'm really optimistic in the work I do because I've seen so many people heal through it, especially yeah. if we're talking about relational norm violations, when do we throw in the towel? I would invite people to give it a lot of time, especially if you're working with a good trust recovery specialist or a counselor who really knows their stuff. Then there's a yeah. good chance that we can actually save the relationship. I think there's a misconception that this breaks relationships up. More times than not, they stay together.
I have a question.
Go for it.
Do you ever feel like LeBron when you start off with a relationship that seems insalvageable and then you save it? Do you ever be like, boy, I'm out here. Yes. Mojo, it could be whatever. I dunked on that relationship.
Oh, I've dunked on some relationships.
Yes. You had a triple-double?
Like, really, though. No, it's really fulfilling work because people come in the most hopeless they've ever been in the relationship, sometimes hating each other, feeling completely broken, feeling PTSD, and then we come to a place, you know, maybe 6 months, maybe a year, maybe a year and a half, depends how good I'm working, where they start to move towards each other again, and the relationships actually get better.
I've heard that a lot.
Yeah, because they actually understand each other finally. They attune and know what they need from each other so that they're getting their needs met. So the relationship feels better than it did before.
I've heard that a lot, but I never thought how that mm-hmm. could happen. But now understanding how they got there and realize it's... Because I used to think, maybe naivete, it was just about the act. Mm-hmm. You know, I just wanted some other butt.
Yeah, that just butt like was this boring. Thing just happened. Yeah.
None of those things was like the sex is bad. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not new sex. It's a whole host of other things. So if you start to, I can imagine you start to unpack those other things. Mm-hmm. Now you maybe have uncovered another level of yourself and your partner. And maybe you even feel closer as a result.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
R&V can bring you closer together. I wouldn't mm-hmm. recommend starting there.
Yeah, that's not my favorite way to bond. Right. Wouldn't recommend that. Right. I think Esther Perel even says something like that because they ask her, like, are you pro R&Vs? And she's
I heard that
no,
episode.
No, I'm not.
Yeah, I wouldn't recommend
wouldn't
an affair.
Wouldn't recommend it, yeah.
And one of the, would not recommend.
Yeah, and one of the things she talks about in her analogy when I heard her answer the question, she was like, I wouldn't recommend R&V in the same way I wouldn't recommend someone get cancer.
Yeah.
But the life and the awareness that mm-hmm. happens to a person who's experienced something such as cancer is something that gives, it's a new appreciation for life. And that's kind of, I think, no, I ain't saying go out and cheat on your spouse or whatever, but there can be something positive. I don't know.
We can transform it into a story of resilience that the relationship can have. Like, it's sort of like, it's healthy for all relationships to do this, kind of just make a list together of all the things that we have accomplished together, all the dragons that we've kind of fought together, things that we've overcome, and look back at that list frequently. Yeah. Like, then you can add, we went through this awful experience. We went to counseling and sat with some wacky lady who was like, we didn't trust her at the beginning. And now it really
becomes part of the fabric of your story.
I could see.
A story of resilience. That was good. I was going to ask you, how do you deal with people who feel like this is one of my like non-negotiable, I've experienced this R&V mm-hmm. and it was one of my things. If he does this, if she does this, then I'm out.
Mm-hmm. If I honor people's non-negotiables, I'll always kind of provide the information and give psychoeducation so they know that there's other options if they wanted to try and stay. But if it was a non-negotiable and they sort of promised that to themselves, then I would honor that.
Mm.
How? It's always a bummer though, because I'm like, oh, but I think that y'all could connect again. So then I have to back myself up because it's not about
me. Can't dunk on you today.
Yeah.
You're lucky, because I would have went for a triple-double on y'all relationship. But hey, man, coach took me out the game.
So what if they're like, I'm willing to give it a try?
I would say that probably like 70% of hurt partners come in saying like, I don't know, but I'm willing to like see. I'm willing to give it a shot.
Tell me there's a chance.
Mm-hmm. I would imagine that's a long, bumpy road.
Melissa has mm-hmm. said that an R&V is a jail-free card, a non-negotiable for her. I'd be curious to see. I'm not, put your head down. I never thought of, you just never think of this stuff, this work. You know what I mean? Like, it's, I'm not going to get this point.
Well, I think part of it is,
just pull the parachute out.
I think I understand what you're saying. But I think part of something that's so important and why I think you're saying like it depends and is because depending on the emotional connection, so to speak, before, like when you were in a healthy, happy place in your relationship, kind of depends on if you're willing to make it work. I don't know. Is that true or not?
Can you rephrase it?
So meaning.
So if it felt really good before.
Yes. And then you went through this. You had a strong bond. Then you went through this rough patch.
It just goes. It's more efficient work, I'd say. Like if you were already bonded and you had a really strong trust system and really good connection, it's easier work for me. And it'll take us less time generally to get through.
Yeah.
If things were already distressed and disconnected, that those are generally the ones that aren't going to even try. They're going to just break up and they won't even show up in my office.
You know what's funny, I did an R&V, but it wasn't cheating. It was a financial R&V.
Mm-hmm.
I bought a car without Melissa's express written approval.
That's a really common one, actually, in my office.
Man, and I was really surprised at how offended she was. Like, it was almost as if I like stepped outside of her. It was like and maybe for her, the financial trust is equally as important as stepping outside of a relationship. Maybe not equally, but I was genuinely surprised at how upset she was, you know, because I was like, oh, I'm going to pay for it. Like, it ain't even a money thing, but it really wasn't about that. It was about trust, being seen, feeling valued. And those are the same feelings that
brought to the fold. Yeah.
Yes. It was like, well, you just feel like, you know, you could do whatever you want. You know what I mean? And in my mind, the narrative I was telling myself is I have to get this car or I can't provide for my family.
Mm-hmm.
If I can't provide for my family, I'm not a good husband or father.
Yeah, it was a vulnerable thing.
Yes, and like I'm gonna tell you one thing about me. You ain't never gonna stop me from. People need to eat. Last name Fredericks. I do what I gotta do. And this car broken. I'll pay $250 to get this new car, and I'm gonna go out and make this. And that's she didn't see that.
Mm-hmm.
She heard. Yeah, I don't care what you say. I'm doing what I want to do. You know what I mean? And I feel like that's an example of how. Even using that correct language can help people realize that's not what I was saying, but it is what I communicated.
Mm-hmm.
And those are two separate things. It may not be what you intended to communicate, but that is what you communicated.
That's what was absorbed, yeah.
Yes, and you have to clarify and clear that up because you got a person sitting here so this is a terrible analogy, or maybe it's a great one. Have you seen Talladega Nights?
Yes.
Okay. So Ricky Bobby's dad was like, if you ain't first, you're last.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And then when he got older, he was like, man, you're the one that said if you ain't first, you're last. He was like, man, I was probably high when I said that. You could be second, third, fourth. Hell, you could be fifth. And Ricky Bobby lived his whole life with bad information.
Mm-hmm.
And the person who did that was like, I don't know what I was saying. I was on. And he's like, bro, that was my whole life. And I feel like that's what happens in marriages. A lot of times what we communicated isn't what we meant, and that person is taking that at face value.
And 9 times out of 10, what we're asking is, are you there for me? We're asking, are you, and this is from Sue Johnson. She's just, it stands for, are you accessible to me? Are you responsive when I reach out? And are you emotionally engaged? So it might sound like, why didn't you do the dishes? But it's, are you there for me? Why did you buy a car without asking me? Are you there for me? If you can tune into that attachment channel and hear that language, conflict just kind of melts off.
So, Morgan.
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm hitting you.
No, no.
have you seen The Breakup?
With Jennifer.
Where Jennifer Aniston. Yeah, okay.
It's been a while though, but there's a great conflict
I want
scene
you to watch.
That one. So that that's, I have, this is the scene that I'm talking about. I love this scene. And
I want you to want to do the dishes.
I want you to want to. So what I'm hearing you say and the interpretation of that moment, because I'm like, I get it, but I'm like, I don't know why I get it, but also I totally get what she's trying to say.
She's asking, are you there for me? Yeah, she's saying, will you be accessible? When I reach out to you, will you respond? And will you be emotionally attuned and available to me?
And do you value my thing? I'm tired too.
I
went to work too. Mm-hmm. You get to go do your thing. I got to do this stuff.
Yeah, that was good.
That was good.
The other secret thing that I think is fun to think about is in most relationships, we're only asking one of two questions. We're asking, am I getting it right? Or do you love me? And it sort of depends on the person. Some people ask both of those, but in moments of conflict, if you can tune in and think, like, are they asking, like,
am I getting it right?
Or what was the other
or
one?
Or do you love me? And so those are also kind of associated with that attachment. So more anxiously attached people are going to be asking, do you love me? And the more avoidantly attached people are going to be asking, like, am I getting it right?
I'll be asking, am I getting it right all the time?
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I got teary-eyed. That was really good. I don't know why.
Mama.
When you think about when I be getting it right, you're like, man, he got it right. You hear me? Lola, we use a little that's crazy because I want to go back to the emotional wheel.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Are you getting it right? And are you there for me? Or do you love me? I'm sorry. That comes out in so many different ways.
Oh, yeah.
And the other person is not reading that as the question. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
I don't know why.
Do you want to express what do you think got to
you? Well, we also just talked about two of the most vulnerable components to our hearts. So, like, if it resonated for you, it might just have touched a little neural network that has some emotion in it. It's so normal.
I ain't even crying, bro. You just touched my neural network.
I don't even know why. It was so random.
Yeah, just make room for it.
That she gonna bust out. I never tell her that because she be smacking me. Kevin, you making me cry. Like, girl, I ain't did nothing to you.
Yes, you do. Oh, that was really good. Okay, anything else?
I don't know what happened there.
I know. That's why I'm like, I don't know why I cried. It just
are you feeling
like,
that I'm not there for you or feeling that I am?
No, I just really like those questions.
Yeah. Those questions were so good, you start crying? Like, I love this question.
Oh, my God.
I love them so much.
Oh, I wore a smoky eye. I can't be crying like this.
Now you got wet. You got smoky eye with water. You got mud eye. It can't all be funny, Josh, okay?
Okay,
you gotta shoot him. Swamp eye.
That would have been better. Okay, Kev, do you have anything else?
Oh, yeah, everybody's a comedian now. I don't have anything else because I don't know what you own right now.
I don't either.
Turn the cameras off.
No,
and you're spending time with Morgan one-on-one.
I think
this
was great.
When I was in sixth grade, nobody was there for me.
My last question is, in all of your years of experience and reading books and research and all of those things, what is the best piece of advice that you can give to couples
about relational norm violation?
Ooh, good
about
question.
Attuning, about conflict.
Let's go with attunement. I feel like I just want to know what you want to say, but give us four then.
I feel like the R&B because that's what we're
talking about. Okay, go with R&B.
Yeah.
Oh, you know what?
Making repairs, I would say. Like, and when we hit our conflict cycle, when it happens, mm-hmm. not just going away from each other and like hoping that we wake up the next morning feeling better.
Yeah.
Intentionally saying, hey, let's talk about what happened and connecting emotionally around it.
Yeah.
And like getting to that, hey, we're on the same team kind of page. The repair process is probably the most important thing and the most forgotten about thing. I think any good relationship counselor you go to will teach you a way to repair and reconnect because that's just normal. I define relationship as, this is from Jean Baker Miller, who's did relationship.
How many books have you read?
All of
too
them.
Many
enough. Enough, Morgan.
Of the
they just
books.
Flow out of you.
All of the books.
So relationship is connection, disconnection, and reconnection. Connection, disconnection, reconnection, around and around. So we're not trying to stop fighting or stop conflict. We want to just get better at it. And the way to do that is to experience it and repair. So
we
cushion it.
This is one thing I want to share. So Melissa and I have been together for 20 years, right? And one thing that I found. So what is a issue or what may have not offended her years ago now might be.
Oh, yeah.
And that's what
people
I feel like.
Change.
People change.
Yeah, we grow
and
together.
And what people don't understand or maybe they underestimate is how hard it is to to adjust to somebody that's never affected them that way before. Right. And you're genuinely like, what?
I don't. Yeah. What? The first 100,000 times I did this, it was fine. Yes. But now.
Yes.
Yeah. Because our partner has evolved or has just mm-hmm. just different season in life. Hormones change us. There's all kinds yes. of things. Culture.
Life mm-hmm. happens. Well, you know, Melissa's parents got divorced. She had kids. We moved here. I got mm-hmm. fired. Like in each of those pockets of life, like the more near we were to the regrettable incident, mm-hmm. the more raw those potential emotions
yeah.
were. So when I got fired at Key Bank,
regrettable inciting incident is a better word for what you're describing
because she said it. Yeah. but what when I got fired from Key Bank, I was actually just so PJ Morton. I don't know if you heard him; he's a great musician. Mm-hmm. He had this song called "Let Go and Let God," and he sang it on this guy's YouTube video. And I played that song when I got fired. I knew I was going to get fired. Mm-hmm. I was just sitting in the bank like they're going to fire me anyway. So I was reading the Bible and listening to this song. Yeah. So this he sang the song. I hadn't heard him sing it in a long time because he wrote it for somebody else. I said all that to say when I heard that song, it took me right back to Kev's about to get fired. I just got fired. Mm-hmm. So when I got fired, I just realized, I told Melissa this after I heard that song. I said, I realized that, like, I can joke about it now, but at that time I was like, man, I don't know how I'm gonna feed my kids or pay my mortgage. Mm-hmm. And that for me as a provider, that was like the most useless. I'm just like, you are trash. Mm-hmm. Now in this part of my life, now I have ways to turn on income. I could go on the road, I could mm-hmm. do this, I can go back and get a job. But at that time, I literally only worked at a daycare and a bank. Mm-hmm. And
that's
the
a
day-
really vulnerable
yes.
situation.
And our mortgage was built on the bank job. So going mm-hmm. back to the daycare mm-hmm. wasn't going to cut it. So at that time, stuff Melissa said, now she could have made a joke about you. You can't, you ain't the man. I make more money than you prior, even though she did. Wouldn't have hurt mm-hmm. me that much because I had a job. But if she would have made that joke when I got fired, mm-hmm. you would have been coming for my whole existence. Mm-hmm. I thank God she didn't. But now she can make that joke again because I'm not in that same place. And I think that's what people underestimate because they think, oh, you guys have been together so long. But what you mm-hmm. don't understand is sometimes things are harder because you are used to a person acting a certain way for 15, 20 mm-hmm. years. And when they change and they make a hard turn, you got to make a lot of adjustments. Mm-hmm. And sometimes like Melissa's case and Melissa 2.0, just say it, Melissa, this new addition, it was a big turn. It was a bit much different turn. We had no therapist. That's just mm-hmm. me and my own Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ. Mm-hmm. And I'd be like, Jesus, can you help me with her? I don't know this woman at all. She looks familiar, but she's tripping all the time. But what I realized is it was once I realized what was happening, I'm like, oh, some of the ways we used to interact, we're not going to be able to interact like that mm-hmm. anymore. And it was a lot of work on me yeah. to adjust to love her in this current version. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the work that I think people don't anticipate happening.
The Gottmans call it love mapping when mm-hmm. we're kind of getting to know the internal world of mm-hmm. our partner. And they Gottman says we have to continuously update our love maps. There's, especially remember in Limerick.
Google Maps has been updated.
Yeah, exactly. Got to update the maps.
I be on to stuff and don't be knowing I be on to stuff.
Because especially like in the...
You're talking to Josh or yourself?
Joshua.
Oh, in the, I mean, I know you're talking to him, but are you talking to you?
He's my mirror. Oh,
go ahead. I'm
in,
sorry.
No, you're good. In the limerence stage, we're love mapping really hard. So that first 6 to mm-hmm. 8 months, mm-hmm. everything that your partner talks about is the most fascinating. Tell me more about that. I love that too. Want to go here? Yes. We just love map so hard. Yeah. And then after that limerence ends, it kind of trails off unless we do that work intentionally. So we have to keep, you know, going on a date night, asking each other questions, kind of figuring out, because I've got clients who are like in their like 80s and 90s and they're still learning new things about each other. That never stops.
Let me tell you, this is going to be the best analogy or the worst. And I'm sorry. We went to Atlanta, visit Melissa's dad, right? He just bought a new house and the whole neighborhood was new, like literally didn't exist. So he sent Melissa the address and we're punching it into Google Maps mm-hmm. and it's like no results found.
Oh, yeah.
Right. So we got to call him like, are you sure it's the right address? He repeats it back to us. Mm-hmm. I put it in my phone. We're like, maybe it's the internet thing. Address is not coming up.
No, that's so he's a like, great oh, analogy. You know what?
This part of the map doesn't exist yet. So he had to send us to another address that was close to his house.
Yeah.
And then he had to come out and meet us mm-hmm. and then follow us into his address.
I like this analogy.
And that's what it's love good, mapping yeah. is. Sometimes I'm changed so much. This ain't even on the map. I'm gonna have to come out from this map place and meet you here.
Like send a carrier pigeon to let you know that
and
been
walk you to my house mm-hmm. because they're still right now in his house. There still ain't no map there, but we know how to get there. Mm-hmm. And that's what love is.
Yeah,
thank you guys for tuning in. I'm Dr. Phil McGraw.
Wait. I want to say.
Nah, man, that was it. Ain't no,
you did
that.
Good.
Grab
I want to. Okay. I want to say two things about this.
If you start crying again, and she gonna start crying,
I'm not gonna cry again.
You go into.
I'm a real one, cuz. Ain't I?
I have really enjoyed this conversation, Morgan, like me seriously. But one of the things I think is so important, and I think it will help people that you said about continuously updating your love map, is a lot of times as we get more seasoned in our relationships, we always want to go back to how people were and think of like the good old days,
man,
instead of doing that intentional work again, getting to know each other again, recognizing that we're growing, we're evolving, and we're changing, and finding that that newness, that freshness, that novelty of the relationship again, and recreating that love map. And so what happens later on is you're like, we've been married for 20 years, you haven't done that work, and then you grow apart. Heart. Because like you said, I've ventured off into new territory and
you
haven't gone there with me.
Yeah, sort of lose each other.
Yeah, that was good. I saw that too just now, that analogy. I had one more question. When you say attunement, there's a definition that comes to my mind. Can you give us yours?
Yeah, so attuning is tuning into your partner's internal world. So it's being able to understand them, to listen in, to feel their feelings with them. It's sort of like a band if they're kind of like
I was going to make that analogy.
Yeah, totally, making sure that we're on the same page.
Give me a
basically.
D on the piano. Let me tune my best.
Exactly. Like, oh, we're all the same now. Yeah.
Yes. This is
she
musicians.
Just reminded us
we're
that
all
she
musicians actually. Melissa used to play
it's been a long time.
She played the sax.
It's been a long time.
Oh, do not
time.
Minimize that sax.
She
playing.
Always minimizes
it's
herself.
Been a long
can we talk
time.
About that with her?
No, this episode's over.
Oh, the food's here? No, come on in, man. No, you're welcome anytime. Now we really gotta close.
No, we are right now.
I have to pee, Melissa.
I was gonna wait for Joshua.
No,
is
you asking more questions. And
I
stuff?
Just had okay. Listen, Morgan. I have thoroughly enjoyed this episode.
Yes.
I've learned, first of all, so much. This was such a dense, rich episode. We covered a lot of ground in probably 75 minutes. It has been amazing. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me. This was such a treat. Oh,
I've had a great time. So can you tell the people where they can follow you? Because I know they're going to be like, listen, she gave us a lot of information. Let me follow her right now.
Yeah, at Connect with Morgan Johnson on Instagram or connectwithmorganjohnson.com.
Okay. And you are in the Austin area.
Yeah, I'm in Austin, Texas.
Austin, Texas.
ATX. Are you hook up horn?
I don't really care too much about sports, unfortunately. I'm very boring.
It's a connecting moment. You missed it.
She turned away.
Welcome, yeah.
Yeah, man. Yeah. You see that
I know,
card?
I gave him,
that was
I
me
gave
saying,
him a turn against.
You turned away from her.
I turned against.
I turned against you.
She turned against. Are you accepting new clients?
Currently have a wait list. But
okay.
Yeah.
I bet you do with all this good information.
ConnectWithMorganJohnson.com if you're in the Austin,
do
Texas
y'all
area.
RNVs now, then when y'all need to work it out, she might have a
don't
free space.
Don't do
open.
The RNVs, but if you're thinking about doing it, please go see Ms. Morgan, save your relationship. Thank you so very much for joining us. I have one announcement, and that is this. The day this episode drops will be the last day the Plus One tickets will be on sale. I am closing out registration. Close of business Thursday, December whatever day. So if you're interested in going, I got all of like 5 tickets,
there,
something like that.
Say, is there even any tickets available?
Listen, buy your tickets now. That's it. That's the only announcement I got. Until the next time, thank you guys so much for joining us. Bye.
Bye.